Wednesday, June 30th, 2021. You are listening to the Daily O Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, coming to you from the Mile High City here in Denver, Colorado. And we are back for another week of talking sports with a dose of common sense. Hey, happy Wednesday to you. Hope your week is going well. Hope you and your family and your friends are all doing well in this time. We are happy to have you here with us today. But I do have something very, very different for you this week. I've got to change things up a little bit this week. I regret to inform my Daily Dose listeners this week that I have a very serious personal situation. I need to take care of it this week. I will give you more information when I can, but today I am actually going to be playing a best of the Daily Dose because right now I'm just incapable of doing a show for you at the level that you honestly should expect from me. I truly apologize. I genuinely do. Not going to do a Daily Dose YouTube video this week. Again, there are just some things I have to take care of this week, and we will come back and hopefully be able to explain a number of things for you next week as to why things are happening the way that they are. Please, I beg of you, stick with us. Keep tuning into the Daily Dose. We will continue to talk sports as only we can, but right now, I would encourage you, sit back, relax, and enjoy a throwback episode of the Daily Dose Sports Podcast. Wednesday, August 19, 2015, you are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, sports writer, coming to you from Denver, Colorado. Hey, you know, we release a new podcast every single Wednesday, and we bring you just a little bit of a different outlook on the world of sports than you are going to get anywhere else. If you are tired of the same dumb sports media takes that you get fed to you, if you would like your sports with a dose of common sense and possibly a side of sarcasm, check out the Daily Dose Sports Podcast. Hey, you can subscribe to it on iTunes. You can subscribe to it pretty much anywhere where they have podcasts. You want to go to Podcast Republic. You want to go to Blueberry. You want to go to Podcast Blaster, iPodder. They all have it. A couple different ways that you can contact me. If you would like to contact me directly, hit me up on Twitter at Daily Dose Sports. You can also find me on Facebook at Daily Dose Sports and just kind of spice up that boring Facebook feed that I know sometimes gets tiresome to look at. That is Daily Dose, DalyDose. If you'd like to head over to our website, got a couple new articles that go up on the website every single week, dailydosesports.wordpress.com. I would encourage you to head over and check those out. And if you would like to email us, dailydosesports@gmail.com. Would love to hear from you. I heard from a few different listeners this week and, you know, good things and some interesting questions and a few things that we might get to in future weeks. Today on the show, going to talk a little bit about the NFL preseason. What does any of this stuff mean? We're watching NFL preseason. Does any of it mean anything? You know, Major League Baseball, divisional races are starting to heat up. I want to hit on those a little bit. And I have a couple of teams that I want you to keep an eye on in baseball that are just a little bit below possibly your radar. I also want to discuss a little bit of college football today. You know, 2 weeks from now, we'll be doing our college football preview. And I want to start hitting on college football just a little bit, get you ready for college football as only the Daily Dose does. In that preview coming up in 2 weeks, we'll be looking at conferences. We'll be looking at some of the coaches. We'll be looking at some of the Heisman candidates. Got a lot of stuff for you coming. In fact, not this Saturday, but next Saturday, we will start releasing conference outlooks on the website. You can head over to dailydosesports.wordpress.com and we will have every single school within all the major conferences covered, give you just a little bit of an outlook on how they might do this season. And of course today, we will also have our Daily Dose Top 5. It's an interesting one. It's a little bit of a different one. You do not want to miss that. Couple of breaking news stories coming out in the world of sports, and I'm going to get to a really, really interesting one here in just a minute. But first off, wide receiver Kelvin Benjamin was carted off from Panthers practice today. Carolina Panthers receiver Kelvin Benjamin carted off with what appeared to be a left knee injury. Not good. We know that these are the things that happen in camp. We know the injuries do take place. Kelvin Benjamin with Carolina. Carolina doesn't have a ton of wide receivers as it is. So going to be very, very interesting to see. Hopefully that is not anything serious. There's also a report coming out. This is through ESPN that Patriots quarterback Tom Brady might be willing to accept a suspension, but only for failing to cooperate with the NFL, not for admitting any type of guilt, not for any type of cheating. A judge has ordered Tom Brady and Roger Goodell back in court now on August 31st. So that will be, next Wednesday, I think. And they say that if no settlement is reached in Brady's appeal of his four-game suspension before then, they will meet on the 31st and we will go forward from there. But there is a rumor out that Tom Brady might accept a suspension, but not admit guilt. Don't you think that's where this has to go? I mean, don't you feel like somebody's gotta give? Now, what's going to be really interesting, if that's the case, and I mean, ESPN's reporting it. So let's be honest. It's 50-50 at best. But don't you feel like that's what it's going to take for this to move forward at all? What I want to see is if that were the case, if that's the case, and that really is legitimate, that Tom Brady says he would take a lesser suspension, does the NFL say, nope, we want the whole thing. You're going to admit guilt and like it. See, the problem with Tom Brady admitting guilt, even if it is true, and I know he's not going to admit guilt. I don't think he's ever going to admit guilt because I don't know that they have the hard evidence. He can't admit guilt. If he admits guilt, he commits perjury. So he can't admit it. I think this is all going nowhere. Did you see the St. Louis Rams this week? St. Louis Rams were out in LA having some training camp, and the fans out in LA had the signs up saying "Welcome home" and "We're glad you're back" and "This is your new home" and "You're going to be back in LA." Now, those who have listened to the Daily Dose, and I realize we get some new listeners every single week, those who have listened to the Daily Dose going back a ways, I think I said this was happening like 2 years ago. Trust me, the Rams are going to end up in LA. When Stan Kroenke started gobbling up property out in downtown LA, I think in like the Inglewood area, I said, wait a second. The Rams are going to be there. Now the only question, because I think the Rams will be there probably by next year. The St. Louis fans could care less. They're not going to build a stadium out there anytime soon. They're going to go out to LA. So I think that's a done deal. The only question that I continue to have is, will the Raiders and the Chargers go, or will just one go, or will both go? And if they do, how are they going to fit all three teams out in Los Angeles? How do you do that logistically? It's going to be interesting to keep an eye on. But the Rams could be heading to Los Angeles very, very soon. Did you see New York Knicks president Phil Jackson this week? He says that he is worried that lottery pick Kristaps Porzingis is too thin, that he could be another Sean Bradley that just is incapable of putting on weight. Let me tell you, just from personal experience, when you say something like this going out, this has nothing to do, with you really think he's too thin. This has everything to do with, hey, Porzingis, you better get in the weight room, because I'm going to say this publicly and I don't think you're working hard enough in the weight room. That's all that is. Don't believe any of that. That is Phil Jackson trying to motivate, Sean Bradley to get, himself into the weight room. Did you watch Hard Knocks last night? Are you watching Hard Knocks on HBO? Last night they had episode 2 of Hard Knocks. They are inside the Houston Texans training camp this year. In week 1, and this really is one of the best shows out there. If you like sports, I realize the language is a little bit rough for kids if you're going to have kids watch it, but if you are, an adult and you're watching Hard Knocks, it really is good. It really is pretty slick. I mean, they're showing some inside stuff. They're showing some conversations that sometimes I'm a little bit surprised at. First week, you saw defensive end J.J. Watt staying after until like 10 o'clock, just working out on his own, running sprints and hitting the sled and getting through the blocking dummies and all that kind of stuff, just working out on his own. And then stayed a few hours and signed every single autograph that was pretty much requested of him for all the fans that stayed. Now, I heard a few people talking about, man, J.J. Watt, how phony is that? Dude stayed and did all that fake work just for the cameras. Hey, I don't care why he did it. I could care less why he did it. He did it. Show me somebody like Carmelo Anthony staying late and putting in work like that. Show me that. I don't care if it's fake. I just want to see it actually be done. Now, here is one word of caution. And it was kind of funny. In the first episode, head coach for the Texans, Bill O'Brien, he sits his coaches down and he talks about how nobody's expecting anything from us and we're supposed to be terrible and we've always been terrible and everyone's disrespecting our quarterbacks. Yeah, I'd disrespect your quarterbacks too if I knew who they were. I don't have any idea who your quarterbacks even are. It's like Brian Hoyer and, Fred Savage. I don't even know his quarterbacks. He has the one kid, Ryan Mallett, that used to be up with the Patriots. Your quarterbacks are horrible. What are you talking about disrespecting your quarterbacks? They're awful. That's just calling things how they are. Here's one word of caution I have to you. NFL fans, football fans, if you are watching Hard Knocks, do not fall in love with Houston Texans. Because what you do is you start to talk yourself into, well, I'm watching them in practice and they're not that bad. Yes, they are. They're horrible. Make no mistake about that. I'm watching their offense last night. They had like 7 or 8 shots from the one to punch it in against a very mediocre San Francisco 49er team. Couldn't get in. Yeah, they're going to be awful. Don't fall into the, I'm watching and they have this little storyline about the wide receiver and then they're showing this rookie defensive back and he looks pretty good. And, you know, the coach is telling us how good the quarterbacks are. Don't believe the hype. The Texans are going to be awful again this year. Let's jump in. Are you watching preseason football? Are you watching the NFL? Seems like somebody is. I mean, the NFL in that opening, Sunday night game? I think it was the Vikings versus the Steelers. The NFL outdrew game 6 of the Stanley Cup playoffs. So somebody's watching it. You know, I always start because we're coming through this season where it's just baseball and midseason races and it's nothing interesting. And I'm always like, football starts and I'm so excited. I'm like, oh man, I can't wait. I'm going to sit down. I don't care if it's like the Jaguars against the Browns. I'm going to sit down and I'm going to watch the whole thing. And then after 10 minutes, I'm like, this is kind of rough. This is bad football. And it's hard to kind of figure out. What does any of it make sense? Like, what does any of it mean? Because I'm watching Brock Osweiler the other night. He stepped in for Peyton Manning and I'm like, he looks pretty good. Brock Osweiler might be better than Peyton Manning. Slow down. I heard some Detroit Lions fans saying that Amir Abdullah looked like the next Barry Sanders. And it's hard to know exactly what's going on. Some of you may know that I actually write for an NFL website. That is not my own, a different website. And so I'm watching the Broncos and Seahawks. I'm writing, an article about the Broncos and Seahawks on Friday night. And to be honest, I'm not sure what I'm seeing because Peyton Manning wasn't playing. Like I said, Brock Osweiler started and he looked pretty good. But here's the problem. He only got sacked one time. They only had one offensive line penalty. I have a hard time believing if they were playing the Seahawks today in the regular season that Brock Osweiler isn't getting more pressure. I don't know about that. I find that a little bit hard to believe. And I don't know if Seattle is running anything. I don't know if those are their starters on the, I know a number of their starters were not in the game. It's hard to tell. And you can say, well, I see 5 or 6 starters, but it's not the same. It's not the same. It's completely different. Because it only takes one guy. Not knowing their assignment and being in the wrong place and everybody looks bad. And so we're watching this game and I'm watching this wide receiver that Seattle has, Tyler Lockett. And I'm hearing Seattle fans now saying he's going to be better than Devin Hester. Did you see him? Did you see him on Friday? Did you see those long returns he had? Here's the problem. So I'm watching them, in the first quarter. The Broncos kickoff, he has like a 46-yard kick return. And then he has like a 23-yard kick return. And then the Broncos score a touchdown. They kick off. He takes it back 103 yards for the touchdown. Again, Seattle fans are jumping on. Oh, man, he's going to be the greatest kick returner ever. Ever. But then this was what gave me a little bit of pause. On the next kickoff return, the Broncos kicked it away from Tyler Lockett. And it went to backup wide receiver BJ Daniels, who, by the way, is not listed on their depth chart. And he busts a kick out for 43 yards himself. So one of two things is happening. Either the Seahawks have found the two greatest returners in the history of the game, or the Broncos special teams might not quite be up to par just yet. Now, you know, when I think back to this kind of thing, and I think back to these situations, and I think back to when I was coaching high school basketball, and there were days that I would be installing like a full court press. So we go out to practice, and I'm putting in a full court press, and I say, okay, today we're going to go with a 1-2-1-1, and here's the deal. You're here. You've got the ball on the first trap. You've got the midline on the first trap. Then you're going to rotate here. You're going to rotate here. You're going to rotate here. Everybody knows the rotations. Now, we go out and we run the trap in practice, and maybe a couple kids didn't run it as much in practice, and they don't know the rotations as well. So they get into the game, the big game on Friday night, and we're running it, and the rotations aren't right because I have to put a couple of these kids in, you know, we've got foul trouble or we've got whatever issue. And wherever they are, the ball just always magically seems to find them. See, I'm a big believer. I don't think we've talked about this on the show yet. I'm a big believer in the sports gods. And you might think I'm crazy. You might think, oh, what's he talking about? There are sports gods. There are basketball gods. There are football gods. There are baseball gods, whatever there is. There are gods out there. And they do this. See, if you don't know what you're doing, the ball will find you. The basketball gods or the football gods will make sure the ball finds you. Think about it. If you're a kid, if you have a kid that's playing baseball and the coach is like, you know what? He can't catch. I'm going to go put him out in right field. Guess where that ball's going? Oh, it's going right to him because the ball finds him. The baseball gods say, oh no, it's coming right to you, young man. I know you can't catch. I know you probably are out there picking daisies. That ball's coming right to you. That's just how sports works. So when I watch these games, you can see if someone doesn't know quite where to be on special teams, that's where that ball's going to go every single time. Now, when I watch these games, I can spot some individual talent, but it's hard to look at the NFL preseason and say, this team's going to have success. It's tough to say. Because see, they might have 10 starters out there and just one backup, but that one backup doesn't quite know what he's doing and gets where that ball's going to go every single time. Every single time it's going to go right to him. So when you see these players and you hear the talk on the big media networks and they start talking about Marcus Mariota went 7 for 8 for 94 yards. Well, yeah, but I don't know what he was going against. He might have been going against, well, he's going against the starters. Yeah, except for 2 or 3 guys. Except for that one corner that had no idea where he was at on the zone rotation. And so he completely missed his assignment and Marcus Mariota looked great. Not to mention the fact that there's the whole thing of, you know, there's a different energy and a different feel, you know, to any of this preseason stuff. It just doesn't feel like a regular season game. You know, one player who grabbed a lot of attention in the first weekend was Tim Tebow. I mentioned Tim Tebow last week. We did our top 5 of the greatest left-handed quarterbacks ever in NFL history. And no, Tim Tebow did not make the list. But Tim Tebow had a pretty big weekend. And I hesitate to bring up Tim Tebow, but I feel like because he's so polarizing. I mean, I want to talk about him just a little bit. But I know for a fact, just me saying his name has triggered something in you, listener. It's triggered something. Either you love him and you say, oh, he's going to talk about Tim Tebow, or you hate him and say, oh, I'm going to turn this podcast off. It's really, really weird how this has all gone. On Sunday, Tim Tebow enters the Eagles game in the second half against the Colts, got a standing ovation. Got a standing ovation. Standing ovation for a third or fourth string quarterback. In the game, Tebow looked good at times, looked average at times. He went 6 of 12, 69 yards, rushed for a touchdown. Solid first outing, I guess. It was okay. I think Tebow still holds the ball too long. I think that he probably fails to give up on plays and sometimes is like, no, I want to keep this play alive. I want to keep this play alive. I want to keep this play alive. And then he ends up putting himself back into a big hole where he could have just thrown it away and saved the down and saved the yardage. But I don't even want to talk about him so much as I just do. I just want to talk about the public reaction because, I mean, it's really weird. The public reaction to him. There was a local reporter here in Denver. Now here in Denver, we had Tim Tebow and he had success here in Denver, but he's not here anymore. I mean, he's out in Philadelphia. We had a reporter here in Denver that wrote a column about how we shouldn't be wasting our time talking about Tim Tebow. Wait a second. You took the time to write a column about him, but we shouldn't talk about him? Okay. How about you stop talking about him first? And then we'll go from there. See, the media creates a lot of this. Now, as usual, I believe there is some sort of common sense approach that we can take with Tim Tebow, isn't there? You can love everything he does. And maybe you sit there and you say, you know, the Broncos would have been better off if they'd have just kept him and not got Peyton Manning. But that isn't true. Peyton has been absolutely amazing. He's set records, lifetime records while being in Denver. He put up the most touchdowns passing ever in an NFL history, in a season. I mean, it's amazing what he's done. So when you sit there and you say, well, Tim Tebow would have been better than Peyton Manning, I gotta sit there and say you're probably crazy. I mean, that's not true at all. And then you have the other side that is like, Tim Tebow is the worst quarterback ever and should probably be like, I don't know, publicly executed. I saw a columnist say that he watched Tebow on Sunday continue to throw passes into the ground. That's not exactly how that went. He had a couple of very nice passes. He moved the team. He got them down there in scoring range a couple times, a few times, and got them down there for a touchdown the one time. So I saw some decent passes. So you can't just lump it in and say, oh, he was just horrible. Just across the board, he was terrible. Here's my take on Tim Tebow. I love the kid. He's a phenomenal kid. You would want your daughter to marry him. You would want your son to marry him. He's just a great person. He seems like a really, really nice guy. He's a hard worker. He goes out there and gets it done the way you would want him. If he was your employee, you would want a guy like that. If he was your son-in-law, you would love him. If he was your son, you'd be proud of him. There is something about the way that he just goes about his business on a day-to-day level that is very, very impressive. Now, I realize, though, he has limitations as a quarterback. He is not going to be a drop-back passer. You have to have the right system to fit Tim Tebow. You've got to put him in situations where he can be successful, and he's not going to be that drop-back guy. But to sit here and act like he has no business being on the field is kind of ludicrous. This is why Chip Kelly brought him in, because he makes sense for Chip Kelly. Chip Kelly, with the new extra point rules, where now you kick it from the 15, and we've already seen a couple of misses, or you can go 2-point conversion from the 2. Could you use Tim Tebow on that 2-point conversion? Well, he can't throw. Well, wait a second. See, here's the thing, and I don't want to get too technical on this. I don't want to get too deep on this, or try to talk, you know, over your head or anything. But here's the thing. So typically in a football game, the free safety is responsible for the quarterback. Now, because the quarterback is going to drop back and pass, the free safety reads that pass and he drops back and he gives you coverage over the top on your wide receivers. So he's doubling any of those downfield wide receivers that he wants to. Now with Tim Tebow in there, you've got a choice. You can either keep dropping that safety back and keep having him continue to play that double coverage, but Tim Tebow might run up your back. He might take off and run with it. Or you bring that safety up to shadow Tebow wherever he goes, and now I have single coverage down the field. I have my wide receivers in single coverage without any safety help. There is an advantage to a player like that. You have to have the right system. You have to be willing to change some of the things you do, but strategically, there can be an advantage to that wildcat kind of system that they run for Tebow. But I want to talk a little bit about why people hate Tim Tebow so much. And I think it probably comes down to just a few things. For one thing, let's be honest. People hate, or they love. I guess I shouldn't just put it all on the hate side. You either love or you hate that Tim Tebow puts his religion out there. You either love or hate it. Either you sit there and say, man, I love that he is not afraid to display his beliefs. I love that fact. I think that's so cool. He's not afraid to go out and say what he believes in and profess his religion out publicly. That's really cool. Or you're on the other side and you say he should keep that religion stuff to himself and he should shut up. I don't want to hear about it. Doesn't have any place in football. I don't want to hear about it. Here is my question for you. As a listener, if you're sitting there and you say, oh man, I love the fact that he professes his religious beliefs. What if, would you still love it if he was like say he was Jewish and he was professing Judaism? Would you still love it? Or would you say, yeah, you should probably shut up. And on the other side, if you hate him for that, what if he was like a Buddhist and he was talking about his Buddhist beliefs? Would you be like, oh, he's got to shut up about Buddha. If I have to hear one more thing about Buddha, I'm so sick of that. Because if either one of those changes your opinion, your problem might not be with Tim Tebow. Your problem might be with religion. It might be with his specific religion. It might be with Christianity, which is what he always professes. That might be your problem. You probably are at least a little bit sick of all the media coverage he gets. I mean, that was the biggest thing. That was some of the points that I know some of the writers were making. Well, we're just so sick of them covering a third or fourth string quarterback. You mean you're sick of you covering him? You're sick of you writing articles about him? If you have a problem with his media coverage, here's a really, really simple fix. Don't watch. Don't listen. Turn it off. You don't have to. You don't have to listen to any of it. You don't have to watch. Do you know why there is so much media coverage of Tim Tebow? Because people eat it up. Because they either want to read about how much they like him or how much they hate him, but either way, you're going to buy. I know there's a number of people that didn't like his celebrations, didn't like his praying, back to the religion thing. A lot of people don't like that squeaky, clean image. He's a good kid. I'll be honest. There's a number of people, I think, that hate him because he's a good-looking guy, too. He's had success. He's done the things in college. He's gone on to the pros. He won a playoff game. He did all these things. I think they look at him and say, he's just a little too good-looking. Kind of looks like a Roman gladiator or something. He's a little bit too good-looking, a little bit jealous. And here's the thing. Some people just like to be contrarian and not like what everyone else likes. Let me tell you a brief story. Brief story. Get off on a side tangent here. I'm dating this girl back long ago. Long, long ago. I'm dating this girl. And we're driving. We're going out. I don't know. We're going to go to dinner or go to a movie or whatever it is that we're doing. And we're going out. And I'm driving in my car. And I have the radio on. But we're having a conversation. I'm not really paying attention to what is playing on the radio. Like, the radio's on, but I'm not really listening to it. We're having a conversation. And all of a sudden, we stop at a light or something. And this female that is next to me listening, she sits there and she says, "Hey, can you turn the radio?" And I said, "What?" She goes, "Turn this radio. I hate Phil Collins." You what? She goes, "I hate Phil Collins. Phil Collins is on singing, I don't know, something about night, tonight, tonight, one more night. Something about night, I'm sure. And she says, "Can you please, please turn this? I hate Phil Collins." Who hates Phil Collins? How on earth does anyone hate Phil Collins? Like, I'm not, like, don't sit there and be like, "Oh, he's a huge Phil Collins guy." I'm not even a huge Phil Collins guy, but like, this is the most vanilla, who cares music that there possibly could be. How could you possibly, like, you could have Phil Collins playing, like, in the elevator, and everybody just be like, "Oh, yeah, well, I guess whatever, you know, he's singing tonight, whatever." Or you could have Phil Collins, like, playing in a library. No one would notice. You could have Phil Collins playing in the radio in your car, wouldn't notice. You could probably play Phil Collins at, like, church, and no one would notice. He sings songs for Disney. Who has any opinion on Phil Collins? Like, you either like him or you don't care. This person hated Phil Collins, and I'm convinced it was because she wanted to be contrarian to everyone else. I hate Phil Collins. It's kind of the same thing here. There's nothing about Tebow to hate, so we try to pick up on things. We try to find things about him that are horrible. I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying right now. You're saying, "No, it's none of those things. It's not the religion. It's not any of those things you just mentioned. It's his game. He just can't play." Now, I'm going to tell you right up front, I think Tim Tebow was blackballed from the league. And I think there is something a little bit sinister about the way he was dealt with in the league, about him winning a playoff game, and then somehow he can't even get, like, a snap in preseason. I think there's something going on there. Rex Ryan, Bill Belichick wouldn't even play him. And you might say that he can't play. Maybe that's your whole beef with him. Well, he just can't play. What about, like, the Rams' Austin Davis? What about Arizona Drew Stanton? What about Arizona Ryan Lindley? If Arizona has Tim Tebow last year in the playoffs, they probably win that first game. What about Tennessee Charlie Whitehurst? Brandon Whedon down at Dallas? Chad Henne down at Jacksonville? Are you seriously going to say he's worse than those players? Look, Tebow's a nice kid. I hope he does well, because I think he's a nice kid. Plus, I think it would probably kill Big Rob if he makes the Philadelphia roster, which would make me laugh to no end. But can we stop with all the Tebow hate? Who cares? Who cares? And if you don't like him, don't watch him. It's really, really actually pretty simple. Did you see James Harrison this week? Former Steeler and Cincinnati Bengal linebacker James Harrison. Apparently, his children won some participation awards from their football league, and he gave them back. He said that we don't want these. They don't get anything for just participating. They have to actually do something, and neither one of them did anything, so he gave them back. Now, I understand what he's saying. I don't know if I'm going to go to that extreme. I understand what he's saying. And as a coach, there, yes, there is something probably fundamentally wrong with giving kids something just for participating. Did you have any effort? My thing is, as a parent, maybe you should kind of preface that with, well, here's the deal. You got this trophy and they gave it to you for participation, but I'm going to allow you to keep it because you did this well. Because maybe you worked hard. Maybe you encouraged your teammates. Maybe you, couldn't you find, like, I get what Harrison's saying. And I do think we have a society that rewards kids for literally doing nothing. Like, and I've coached even some little league teams because now my kids are, you know, playing and stuff. And I've coached some of those teams. And you have the one kid that is sitting on the floor and like eating bugs and he's still going to get that trophy. As a coach and as a parent, I think we might have to step in. And so I understand what Harrison's saying. Might have been a little bit of a hard line with making him give the trophies back for participation. Just as a parent, if you have a parent and if you're the parent and you have your kids in Little League and they give a participation trophy, just add something. Like, you talk to them about it. You be the parent and you say, well, here's why you won this. And I know he gave it to you participation, but I'm going to allow you to keep it because you did these things well. That seems like that would make a little bit more sense to me. Let's jump over to Major League Baseball. There's a couple teams that I want you to keep an eye on. A couple of races that I just want to watch a little bit. Cause kind of lost in that whole New York Yankees Toronto Blue Jays race. And it's a good race. It's an interesting race. Obviously the Yankees had that huge lead. Blue Jays now are hot, but they're cooling off just a hair. There's one team that people are forgetting a little bit about. And the Baltimore Orioles are just lurking. They're just right there. And now they're starting to win. Chris Davis is playing out of his mind. The Orioles have a little bit of everything. They've got hitting. They've got Davis. They've got Adam Jones. They've got Manny Machado. And they've got solid pitching. You've got Ubaldo Jimenez. You've got Miguel Gonzalez. You've got Chris Tillman. I mean, this race may go down to the finish. This race could go down to like the final week of the season. And I don't know which of these three teams is going to get it going. There is one team that I'm starting to hear some grumblings about. There's one team that seems like they're kind of warming up. And you're going to start to hear some talk a little bit about the Texas Rangers and what they can do. I'm going to tell you right here, I don't believe it. I don't believe it. I don't think they have the depth of pitching to hang. And I think eventually when the games start getting tight, that's what it's going to come down to. Sorry, Jimmy. Sorry, Travis. I think the Rangers are probably a year away. You know, another team that is interesting to me that I just want to keep an eye on. And we've talked about them just a little bit before. But there's another team that's out there that's kind of lurking that it's kind of funny. Cause you look at, you know, over in the National League, you look at the St. Louis Cardinals. I mean, they're sitting at 76-43, obviously leading the Central. Look very, very solid. Pitching is very good. Phenomenal organization. You know, St. Louis, hey, they're going to be right there. Dodgers sitting in first place, 67-52, leading the West. Dodgers, just a loaded roster. I mean, so, so good. You've got the Mets, you know, out in the East at 64-55. The pitching, I know the hitting is at times hit and miss, but the pitching lineup that they have, the Mets are somebody. But let me ask you one question. If the playoffs started today, like right now, and you had Cardinals versus Giants, who are you taking? I'm probably taking the Giants. Dodgers versus Giants, who are you taking? Yeah, I'm probably taking the Giants. Mets or Giants? Yeah, I'm easily taking the Giants in that one. It's kind of crazy, but I mean, I know kind of where this all stands. And I realize that the Giants have some work to do just to even be, you know, to make that wild card spot. But if they get in and they are just five games, you know, or not five games, they are just two games behind Chicago, for that wild card. I don't know. I might take San Francisco over just about anyone on the National League side. They just know how to win. Going to be pretty fun. And the other team that's kind of interesting to watch is Chicago. I thought Chicago would be maybe another year or two out. Maybe two or three out. Okay, maybe 126 out. Who am I kidding? But Chicago's right there. They're at least in the hunt. They might have a shot at a wild card. You know, like I said before, In 2 weeks, we are going to have our college football preview. We'll break down the conferences. I'll give you a little bit of outlook on who I think is going to lead those conferences, who the top teams are going to be, who might contend for a national championship. Take a look at some of those things. But I want to talk a little bit about college football right now. Did you see what Notre Dame is doing? Have you seen what Notre Dame is doing? You might not be aware of this. I hadn't heard this too much. Starting September 8th, Showtime will begin televising a weekly all-access look at Notre Dame football and head coach Brian Kelly. Very similar to what Hard Knocks is doing. You know, Notre Dame, of course, they were the first to get on and jump on that money with, you know, the TV contract and having their own TV kind of network and all those kind of things. And they are jumping on this, and they're going to have an all-access kind of Hard Knocks college football thing going starting September 8th. Why now? Why now? Why do you think Notre Dame's doing that? I know that they like to obviously, they love them some money, but it's kind of interesting because here's my personal belief. I think Notre Dame has to do it. I think Notre Dame needs to do it. I think in order to try to compete with these other schools and these other teams that are out there, I think they have, because see, now I don't know your age, and like I've told you before, our listeners vary a great deal in age, but kids today, they don't know about like Paul Hornung and Johnny Lujack and Newt Rockne, and they don't care. They don't know about Tony Rice and Rocky Ismail. So I think they have to do it. They have to try to make themselves relevant in today's market. So yeah, keep an eye out for Notre Dame. Gonna kind of be interesting to see exactly how they do business there at Notre Dame and what really goes on. I don't know. I think they're trying to get out in front of it. You know, I was going through kind of preparing some things for the college football previews that I'm going to be putting out on the website. You can go over and check those out at dailydosports.wordpress.com. I got, you know, all the major conferences, going to break down each and every single team in those conferences. So I'm going through that. And here's the one thing that I've noticed that's kind of common, for every single team. Well, we had a really good offseason. Oh, we had a great offseason. The one thing about us is we had a really, really super good offseason. Does anyone have a bad offseason in college football? I would just like one coach to just be like, you know what? I mean, we're trying to piece it together, but I gotta be honest. Our offseason was horrible. We had like 8 kids arrested. You know, I was out drinking most of the time. My assistants are a bunch of morons. So-and-so didn't work very hard, not nearly as hard as they should have. My quarterback never saw the weight room. He was out, you know, messing around and hurt himself doing a keg stand. Can someone just be honest and be like, no, we had a horrible offseason. I gotta be honest. Speaking of college players getting arrested, there's a website out there that went and tracked down what schools had the most arrests over the past 5 years. Might surprise you just a little bit. Number one on the list, Washington State had 31 arrests over the past 5 years. I didn't even know Washington State had a college football program. How on earth is there just nothing to do? What is that? Pullman, Washington? There must be nothing to do up there. Florida, it comes in at number 24, or at number 2, with 24 arrests. Now you sit there and you say, okay, Florida, over the past 5 years, that was still when Urban Meyer, you know, was still there. And so based on that, but here's something to think about. Ohio State came in at number 26 with 12 arrests. If we add 12 and 24, we get 36. Urban Meyer's right at the top of the list. Very, very good. He does get some thugs. Georgia comes in at number 3. They had 22 arrests over the past 5 years. That's about where I'd expect, you know, Georgia to be. Not quite winning the whole thing. They come in second, even in that. So yeah, that's about right for Georgia. Who else was in here? Oklahoma came in at 5. Bob Stoops couldn't even beat out the SEC teams. Come on, Bob Stoops. You're always calling out the SEC teams. At least beat them out. There's just a few. Florida State came in at 19. Now imagine if Florida State's, you know, if the Tallahassee Police Department actually arrested and didn't protect Florida State, you know, players. Imagine what it would really be then. That would be pretty impressive. Who else is on this list? You know, it comes in really, really low. South Carolina. You can say what you want about Steve Spurrier, and we're going to talk about Steve Spurrier in the college football preview, and we'll discuss him just a little bit. But Steve Spurrier, say what you want about him, and South Carolina had 9 arrests in the past 5 years. Like I said, Steve Spurrier somehow, I know they didn't win as much last year as probably they wanted to, but South Carolina comes in pretty low. Colorado. Now I'm here in Denver. Colorado came in at number 23 with 13 arrests. That's like 13 more things than they have wins. Like they had what, like one win last year, two wins last year, 13 arrests. That's like how many wins they've had in the past 5 years. That's pretty interesting that their arrests match their win totals. Just something to keep in mind. You know, every year it seems like in college sports especially, but, you know, professionally college, we have this kind of coaching carousel where a coach leaves and another coach takes a spot. I want to just keep you up to date on a couple of coaching moves, just so you kind of have these in mind as we're getting into the season. Of course, Jim Harbaugh left the San Francisco 49ers and went to Michigan. That was a big one. People are really, really excited about Jim Harbaugh. Mike Riley, longtime coach up at Oregon State, has now gone to Nebraska. Nebraska ran Bo Pelini out of town. And, you know, Bo Pelini, I think he won like 9 games every year he was there. Not quite good enough. They bring in Mike Riley. Gary Anderson, who was at Wisconsin, then went to Oregon State. I don't know how you figure that Oregon State's a better job than Wisconsin, but I know he has family and that's kind of the area of the country that he grew up in. So Gary Anderson goes to Oregon State, leaving Wisconsin open, which Paul Chryst took, who was at Pitt. He is now at Wisconsin. Pitt, I think, gets a new coach every single year. Locally here at Colorado State up in Fort Collins, Jim McElwain left Colorado State to take the Florida job, and Georgia offensive coordinator took the job up at CSU. And then one of the more interesting hires, I thought, of all the coaching moves that have taken place, Tony Sanchez. Tony Sanchez was the head coach at Bishop Gorman High School and was given the UNLV head coaching job. Going to be interesting to keep an eye on UNLV. Probably will not, it's going to be a little bit different from Bishop Gorman. If you know Bishop Gorman back in Las Vegas, Bishop Gorman is a big, big time school. Going to be a little bit different to go to from Bishop Gorman, the biggest of the big, one of the big dogs, to UNLV. Bishop Gorman probably has better facilities. They probably have better players. Going to be a little bit interesting to see how a high school coach can make that jump from high school up to the collegiate level and jump right in. Hey, as we do every single week, we have got to get to our Daily Dose Top 5. Got a Daily Dose Top 5 today that is a little bit different. Did you know, and you might not know this, that Friday is National Senior Citizen Day? This coming Friday, National Senior Citizen. If you know some senior citizens, you might want to, give them a hug, tell them happy National Senior Citizen Day. But, you know, I started to think about some of the older athletes that have just, you know, played long careers, had played late, played, into their, older age, as it were, played at a high level, maybe at an older age. And so today we're going to count down the top 5 senior citizen athletes. Now, I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not going to go out and be like, oh, this 104-year-old lady went and ran the New York Marathon. I don't care about that. I'm talking about actual sports that we watch, care about. But top 5 senior citizens that were still playing, high level of athletics. And I'm going to give an honorable mention. I think this makes 2 weeks in a row. We never give honorable mentions. But we're giving an honorable mention this week. And my honorable mention this week is going to go, and I've got to explain this. I'm going to give my honorable mention to an athlete that played well, even, at an older age, to Herschel Walker. Herschel Walker is 53 years old. You may have seen recently that he said he was contemplating an NFL comeback. Now, Herschel Walker, obviously, great career down at Georgia. One of the greatest, college players to ever play. Probably the greatest player in Georgia history. Went to the NFL, played with the Cowboys. Obviously, with the Vikings and involved in that big trade, played with the Eagles a little bit, running back, catch out of the backfield, could do a little bit of everything, a little bit kick returner, all that kind of stuff. Just recently, at 53 years old, Herschel Walker stated that he might be interested in making an NFL comeback. He still does, 9,000 push-ups and 4 million sit-ups a day. And then everything he does, he says he doesn't work with weights. It's all natural stuff. It's push-ups, sit-ups, like
boxes a kangaroo and chases a chicken around. I don't know what all he does. But he says he was considering. Now, here's the thing. He says that recently, without training, just doing his day-to-day stuff, and he's like an MMA fighter. He's done some MMA fighting, kind of recently too. After he retired out of football, he kind of did some MMA fighting. He says recently, without training for it, he recently ran a 4.3 40. Did you really? You sure about that? Now, I'm not going to say Herschel's lying. I don't think it's that. Yeah, maybe he is. But here's the thing. Like, if you're Herschel Walker and you're this huge dude, for one, he's pretty big. I'm not saying he's fat. He's not fat. He's a big dude. I'm not sure you're running the same kind of 40 as like Honey Badger with the Cardinals. I don't know if you really ran a 4.3 40. I mean, I'm seeing these young kids come out of, college and go to the combine and they ran 4.3 40s. You look a little bit different than they do. But here's the thing that I just want you to keep in mind. Like, here's his friend or whoever it is going to time him. And Herschel comes running and flies by and he comes back and he says, "Hey, what was my time?" This is a guy who has like done MMA. This is a guy who, like I said, boxes a kangaroo every day. What are you going to tell him? 4.3? Really? Really? I ran a 4.3? Yeah, you ran a 4.3. Of course you ran a 4.3. And then Herschel's leaking it to the papers. I'm not sure I'm believing Herschel Walker ran a 4.3. Oh, I know, Georgia fan. Oh, yes, he did. He really did. I don't think he did. But we'll give him an honorable mention. Still doing some things at the age of 53. Number 5 on our list of greatest senior citizen athletes, Satchel Paige. You know, Satchel Paige played professionally in the Negro Leagues for 22 years. And he was an incredible pitcher. 5-time Negro League All-Star. Satchel Paige, here's how good Satchel Paige was. They say that Satchel Paige would tell his infielders when he was pitching, "Hey, sit down. Ball's not coming to you. Just everybody sit down." And then he would just go on to strike the batter out. At age 42, Major League Baseball integrates. And Paige actually signed with the Cleveland Indians. At 42 years old, he was a rookie with the Cleveland Indians. As a technically rookie, he went 6-1, had a 2.48 ERA, pitched 2 shutouts, and had 43 strikeouts. And he pitched professionally for 2 more seasons after that. Satchel Paige, very, very good, even into an older age than we think of as a professional athlete. Number 4 on our list, hockey player Gordie Howe. You know, Gordie Howe played 26 seasons. He played 25 of those seasons with the Red Wings, was a 23-time All-Star, won the Stanley Cup 4 times, won 6 Hart trophies, which, if you don't watch hockey, is like the MVP of the league. And Gordie Howe competed in 5 different decades as a professional hockey player. They actually named the Gordie Howe hat trick after him. If you don't know what a Gordie Howe hat trick is, that's when you get a goal, an assist, and you get in a fight. Gordie Howe, tough, tough dude. And until Wayne Gretzky came along, was considered by most people to be, the greatest hockey player who had ever played. Gordie Howe played a long, long time, had an amazing career. Number 3 on our list of greatest senior citizen athletes, Nolan Ryan. Pitcher Nolan Ryan had a 27-year career. He was an 8-time All-Star. He did win the World Series with the Mets, and was the all-time leader with 7 no-hitters. Nolan Ryan retired at the age of 49. And the best thing about Nolan Ryan to this day is in his final season when he hit, who was it, a White Sox, Robin Ventura, and then Ventura charges the old man, and Nolan Ryan proceeds to throw him in a headlock and punch the young kid in the face repeatedly. Ventura got tossed out of the game. The umpire said Nolan Ryan was just defending himself. Ryan stayed in the game. White Sox fans were furious. Nolan Ryan comes in at number 3 on our list of great senior citizen athletes. Number 2 on our list, George Blanda. George Blanda played 26 seasons, most in NFL history, was a quarterback and also a kicker. He led the league all time in points when he retired. He retired at the age of 48. And the only reason George Blanda retired, because the teams he was playing for said, we just want you to kick. We don't want you to worry about playing quarterback anymore. So he just kind of had enough of that. Pretty amazing what he did. He was a four-time all-AFL player. He was a three-time AFL champion. Number one on our list. Who could be our number one greatest senior citizen athlete of all time? 28-year career? 28 years? He was 76-5 as a professional fighter. It's got to be George Foreman. He started back in 1969. And in 1994, at 45 years of age, he knocks out Michael Moore to become the heavyweight champion of the world. I was watching that fight. And George Foreman is getting crushed. He's getting punched. And I'm wondering what's holding him up. And the only thing that kept us watching the fight was we said, he has a puncher's chance. Because Foreman could hit you. And he was getting hit, And late in the fight, he caught Michael Moore, and you knew as soon as he hit him, it was over. George Foreman, our number one senior citizen athlete this week on the Daily Dose Top 5. Hey, like I told you, next week, we will have some more NFL talk. You know, weeks two and weeks three of the NFL preseason at least get a little bit more interesting. You start to see kind of the dress rehearsals. You start to see some of, the starters actually come out and play a little bit, and they start to look a little bit more game-like. I realize it's still going to be preseason, but it's a little bit better. Got to talk about some more Major League Baseball, some teams to keep an eye on, some players to keep an eye on, and maybe some divisional races that are getting tighter. Next week, going to talk a little bit about some under-the-radar college football teams. Teams, you know, when I was going through doing some research on some of these conferences, there's a few teams out there that might not be on your radar that you might not even think about. They might be pretty good this year. And they're not the normal teams. They're not the teams that you usually think of. They could throw a wrench in everybody's works by getting in there. And as usual, we will have our Daily Dose Top 5 that we do every single week. Hey, if you get a chance, go over to iTunes, give us a 5-star rating, and just give us a quick review. It doesn't have to be anything great. Just throw something on there. We'd appreciate it so much. It helps us get into the rated podcast and gets us a few more listeners. Like I've told you before, the bigger this gets, the better this gets. I have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do this without you. I appreciate all that you do. I hope that you enjoyed the show this week. Have a great week, everybody.